last chapter of 2 Peter. That would be page number 34, page 34 in your workbooks. I want to thank Daryl for filling in for me last week. And at this time, Daryl's going to lead us in opening prayer for our Bible class. Amen. All right, when we look at it, it's interesting to me, maybe it's just something that came across my attention. When we started 1 Peter, we talked about the living what? The living hope. That was chapter 1. And then as the chapters went on, it dealt with some conflict that we were doing and the suffering, and then it ended up with our arch enemy, the devil himself. And 2 Peter chapter 1, it started out in the positive. Remember, if you do these things, what? You'll never fall. And it listed a number of things that if you did those things, you wouldn't fall. So just maybe I got too much time on my hands. When I looked at chapter 1 of the first chapter and chapter 1 of the second letter, both letters start out the positive. Here's where you are and here's where you can go. Then at the end of both letters, he started talking about the problems that they're going to face. And the first problem, the persecution that's going to come their way as they live as a Christian. And in the second letter, chapters 2 and 3, the false teachers, and I believe more specifically the false teachers who were possibly in their midst. But it's always interesting, don't ever abandon the hope that is ours. Don't ever abandon applying those things so that we can stay true. So that takes us to 2 Peter chapter 3. And we're going to read verses 1 through 9, and then we'll go over the worksheet. So verses 1 through 9 of 2 Peter chapter 3. Let's go ahead. Lance, you want to read that for me. What version are you using, by the way? Okay. All right. As we go back to verse 1, as Lance read that, notice, talks about the second, and the idea of stir up. Now, the New King James Version says stir up your pure minds. If you have the NIV, New International Version, it says stimulate you to wholesome thinking. So the idea of stirring up or, now the unwholesome thinking would be all the false teaching that they're dealing with. Would you agree with me? So to stir up your pure minds to wholesome thinking, the thinking that is in harmony with the will of God. As he does that, we look at that. Look at the 2 Peter 1:12 in that box there, 2 Peter chapter 1 and verse 12. Joe, are you in that box? Read that box for me, please.
Always of these things, though you know and are established in the presence of
And we studied that before. But the thing I like about both that and this verse, chapter verse 1, we have to have a reminder over and over again so that things don't happen. Remember, what is taught that if you forget history, what's it going to do? It's going to repeat itself, right? And the same thing religiously. He's reminding them, don't forget these things. These things are happening. So it's a very important thing that we remind ourselves of these things, because what happened back then can happen today. So we want to be aware of that. And that's why he goes on and states, verse 2, be mindful of the words which were spoken by the holy prophets and the commandments of the apostles. Now there they didn't have the book of 2 Peter. Fortunately, we do. Let's go to 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verses 16 and 17. Lonnie, do you want to read that for me, please? Do you read? No, okay. Daryl, I'll move on to you. 2 Timothy 3, 16 and 17. Second Timothy 3, he's looking on his computer, I think, 16 and 17. And we'll talk about later, wrong passage. 2 Timothy 3, 16 and 17. Okay, that's fine. Gives me time to get my thoughts together for the things we're going to go over in a minute. Okay, the reason I brought that up, they had the oral version from the prophets and the apostles while they were there. We have a step better. We have the entire scriptures for us that there is no excuse why we can't spot error when we see it, because we've got the standard by which we can expose error from truth. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay, let's go on as we continue, unless somebody wants to comment on that. Okay. In verse 3, before we go into verse 3, let us understand this. Let the Bible define the Bible. Now, the reason I say that, a lot of people have a lot of different ideas as to the last days, right? You see that in verse 3, the last days? Yes, we are in the last days. Someone asks, are you coming to the last days? No, we are in the last days. But what I try to show people, if that comes up, is to show them the last days began at Pentecost. That's when the last days. The last days there is talking about the last dispensation of time before Christ comes back and the righteous meet him in the air and we go in forever to be with him and this world being destroyed. So again, when someone says, are we in the last days? Absolutely. However, it's not based upon what's going on in Iran right now. It's not based upon what's going on overseas. It's based upon book, chapter, and verse. Now, as we talk about the last days, we'll get those other two books in a minute. Let's go to that third box where it says last days. In Acts chapter 2 and verse 16 and 17. Acts chapter 2, 16 and 17. Susan, do you want to read that for me? No, the box that's it, the whole thing, the verse and the next verse, Acts and Hebrews.
But this is what was spoken by the prophet Joel, and it shall come to pass in the last days, says God, that I will pour out my spirit on all flesh. Your sons and your daughters shall prophesy, your young men shall see visions, your old men shall dream dreams. Hebrews 1:1-2. God who fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by his Son, whom he has appointed heir of all things, through whom also he made the world.
Okay, going back to Acts chapter 2. But this is that which is spoken by the prophet. And he spoke about what? The last days. And this is recorded in Acts chapter 2, and that is what? The day of Pentecost. That is the day the church was established. Joel, the prophet, said, this is that. What? The last days. When did they begin? Day of Pentecost. So are we still in the last days? Do you see how I did that? Yes or no? This is that. And then when it gives the prophecy of Joel, it talks about the last days, does it not? And what he's talking about is as they were speaking in other tongues and other languages, correct? So the last days, we have a pinpoint indicator when the last days began. And that was, of course, on the day of Pentecost, because the prophet Joel, when he prophesied, said, this is that. Then the inspired apostle Peter in Acts chapter 2 said, this is that which is spoken upon by the prophet Joel in the last day. Is everybody following me where I'm coming from? Yes. Yes, yes, ma'am. That would be that, and later on you had some women who would also speak in tongues. But yeah, started about them speaking in different languages. Yes, ma'am. Aria, did you have your hand up or just wiping your head? Okay. I want us to be sure we understand that. This is not Church of Christ doctrine. This is going book, chapter, and verse, because we're talking about the last days. This clearly, beyond a shadow of a doubt, said, this is that. What? In the last days. So what does Peter say? What Joel had talked about in previous history, when the prophet Joel had talked about previously history, now it's happened. Now we're in the last days. Make sense? Now, as we go back to verse 3, notice scoffers will come in the last days according to what? Okay, let's go to the book of 2 Timothy chapter 3. 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. James, would you read that for me? Second Timothy chapter 3 and verse 1. We actually read through 5.
For men shall be lovers of their own selves, covetous, boasters, proud, blasphemers, disobedient to parents, unthankful, unholy, without natural affection, truce makers, breakers, false accusers, incontinent, fierce, despisers of those that are good, traitors, heady, high minded, lovers of pleasure, more than lovers of God, having a form of godliness, but denying the power thereof, of such turn away.
Do you think they had that problem in the first century? Yeah. Men shall be, what? In these last days. And then it starts listing those things, correct? Do we still have that problem today? Okay. So all I'm trying to say, so when it says scoffers will come in the last days, they came in the first century. Aren't they dealing with scoffers right then and there? So we know definitely the last days started on Pentecost and will go till time is no more on this earth. The reason I stress that, don't let people take you to Matthew chapter 24 and finagle Matthew 24 for the last some future date. First of all, the first 34 verses of Matthew 24 is talking about the destruction of Jerusalem. Okay, and I take the latter part, the end of 24 and chapter 25, my understanding is talking about the end of time. But people run, and all they're doing that is to get their premillennial idea. They get two things from premillennialism here: the last days and the definition of the 1,000 years. First of all, that is not a definition of time. That's just showing that time is of no essence to God. It's not saying this is how we equate time. It's just that time is of no essence. So he talks about the scoffers that they would come in these last days. And notice, and 2 Peter 3:3, New American Standard Version. Kirk, you want to read that? Do you have a booklet with you? Oh, you don't? Then you can't read that. unless you use the New American Standard Bible. You don't. Okay. All right. Go ahead. Jerry, you got a booklet, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Read that little box, 2 Peter 3:3, New American Standard.
Know this first of all, that in the last days, mockers will come with their mocking, following after their own lust.
Okay. So, think about this. He's talking about the time that they were in right there. And he talks about these scoffers in verse 4. Verse 4 goes back to verse 3, does it not? The scoffers, what are they talking about? In verse 4, where is the promise of what? And that's talking about the coming of who? The coming of Christ. Was there a misunderstanding of the coming of Christ? As there is today, there's a misunderstanding of the coming of Christ. Is Christ coming? Absolutely. I don't know when. You don't know when. But he is coming. But he's not coming on my time frame. He's coming at the end of the last days. But you had scoffers, those who were perverting the truth, making fun that here he hasn't come. And notice what it says, where is his coming? For since the fathers fell asleep. Do you see that in verse 4, fathers fell asleep? I agree, and many commentators would agree, and that doesn't make it right. But they look at the fathers of Christians who had died previous to them. So as they look back to Christianity, there had been Christians who had fallen. When we use the word fallen asleep, that in the New Testament often refers to dying or death. So I said, okay, we've had those who have fallen asleep and the last day still haven't come. Remember, we have an example of that, do we not? Let's go to 1 Thessalonians. Kirk, I want you to read there. I know you got a Bible with you. I know you didn't have that book there. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. And Kirk, let's start 13 through 18. 1 Thessalonians 4, 13 through 18, please.
But do not want you to be in ignorance, brethren, concerning those who have no sleep, lest you sorrow as others who have no hope. For if we believe that Jesus died and rose again, even so God will bring with him those who sleep in Jesus. For this we say to you by the word of the Lord, that we who are alive and remain until the coming of the Lord will by no means deceive those who are asleep.
Okay, go back to verse 13, everybody, if you're there. Go back to verse 13. So what's he trying to comfort the brethren? It shows us that some brethren had died, right? In verse 13. So he doesn't want them to be concerned. They don't want to. It doesn't say they shouldn't sorrow. Understand that. You shouldn't sorrow as others sorrow. Are you going to sorrow even if a brother or sister in Christ die? Sure. But we don't sorrow as others sorrow. We sorrow because we no longer have relationship with them here on this earth, but we don't sorrow those of the world because those of the world don't have the hope, but we as God's children have that hope, do we not? So I tie this passage, when we go back to 2 Peter chapter 3, when it talks about the fathers, when it talks about those who had gone on and died. That, now, if you disagree, that's fine. I'll be happy to hear what you have to say on that. But what he's showing them here is don't forget these things. And they are saying, well, listen, the last days haven't come. They're at the beginning. And look at verse 5. For this they what? They willfully, who are the they? People that are scoffers, right? That goes back to verse 2. So notice, when are the scoffers coming? In the last days. They were there as Peter's writing this epistle. They're making fun, and they have chosen not to pay attention to. And what's that event being spoken of there? What did they forget? Yeah, they forgot the flood. But they forgot the flood by what? By choice. I like the phrase, they are willfully ignorant. And now when we talk about the flood, we're all familiar. Let's just go to just the two passages. We're not going to read the whole account. Go to Genesis chapter 7. Gary, since you're there, I'm going to have you read both passages for me, please. Genesis, not the chapter, but Genesis 7, verse 11.
In the 600th year of Noah's life, in the second month, the 17th day of the month, on that day all the fountains of the great deep were broken up and the windows of heaven were opened.
Okay, so that's where the flood begins, right? With book, chapter, and verse, correct? And then Gary's going to read for us chapter 8, verses 13 and 14. Because remember, when the flood started, where's Noah and his family? They're in the ark, are they not? Okay. Chapter 8, verses 13 and 14. 13 through 15.
And it came to pass in the 601st year, in the first month, the first day of the month, that the waters were dried up from the earth, and Noah removed the covering of the ark and looked, and indeed the surface of the ground was dry. And in the second month, on the 27th day of the month, the earth was dry.
And that's when you go, and I think, Gary, I'm glad you stopped there. But you go on, that's where, again, Noah and his family came outside of the ark. But the universal flood, what are they? Now, why did he bring up the universal flood? God's punishment on who? The unrighteous. All right. But now, did God give them time before the flood came? Yep. At least 120 years, if not more. There was time given for them to change. Because remember, in 2 Peter, Noah is described as a preacher of righteousness. So we have to conclude that as he and his sons were building the ark, he was trying to get people to come to their senses and do that which is right. Otherwise, what would it mean, preacher of righteousness? Now, how he went about it, I don't know. All that's showing us here is people had scoffed because the promise of his coming, he didn't come, therefore he's not going to come, therefore let's follow after the fleshly lust that we desire. Question, do we have the same problem today? How many people think that the Lord could come next week? Yeah, he can come when he wants to, but how many even pay attention to that? Hardly anybody. Would you agree with me? Hardly anybody. If we would be focused as they are instructed to be focused, we'll always be prepared. Because as he goes on, after he talks about that, the earth perished by water. But then he talks in 7, 8, 9 about a new destruction. Not of the flood, but the destruction that is going to come. The destruction that's going to involve this earth as we now see it, correct? So, are we aware that this earth is going to be destroyed? Yeah, we are. But look at now, and I'm going to jump ahead of myself. Here's how the Christian should act. And you know, when I prepared this lesson, I have to say, sometimes I don't have this same focus. Look at verse 12. Looking for and hastening the coming day of God. Who's being told that? Christians. Right? How many times do we look for and hasten the coming of the Lord? Okay. Okay, now we're going to go back up, but I'm just trying to say, here you had the, okay, get in your mind what's happening. Here you have these scoffers. The last days, they haven't come. The Lord hasn't come. Look at all the time that's gone by. Look at our fathers have died, and we're still here. So therefore, they conclude it's never going to happen. And that a possibility, and therefore, they just go about their lust of the flesh. What it's warning us Be careful on that. Because now as we go on, and anybody want to comment before I go on? So then that he talks about, beloved, do not forget that with the Lord, one day is as, does not say one day is 1,000 years. Does your Bible say one day is 1,000 years? Huh? Like 1,000 years. And 1,000 years as one day. This is not a mathematical equation to try to figure out when the Lord is coming back. Because in Matthew chapter 24, verse 35, 36, no man knoweth what? The time or the hour when he comes back. So don't all that verse is saying is God does not reckon time like us because God is eternal. See, we reckon time in days and years and months. God doesn't have to do that because he is and he forever will be. And so we equate time in our little puny brain and our minds, but the reason he hasn't come back is what's he want? What does he want? Well, why hasn't the Lord come back, according to verse 9? Each day he doesn't come back gives an opportunity for those who are outside of Christ to come inside of Christ. For instance, had the Lord come back in 1974, I would have been forever lost. I thought I was saved, but I wasn't. I thank God he didn't come back in 1974. Because after that, we had obeyed the gospel, and the rest of the story, we've kept on trying to do that which is right. So the reason he hasn't come back is not that he's forgotten his judgment. He hasn't come back because he's patient with man, longing that people would repent and come. Now, that doesn't mean he's never coming back because it clearly tells us there's going to be a time he comes back, correct? But he hasn't come back because he's patient. What we do, though, is we wear out his patience. We're like the small child. How many of you know this? Are children smart to know how long they can get away with something? You know, they'll hear the parents say no, and the child, as they get a little bit older, they know that no doesn't mean anything. And they'll say no again and no again. And the kid still does what they're told not to do, right? Have you ever seen that? Okay, not at your house. But there becomes a point of time where the infliction or the way the voice is used, that now they know they're serious. Raise your hand if you've ever seen that. I've seen that so many times. And that's how we are with God. We're thinking, well, God said yes, yes, he's gone. And we tend to think, well, he's never coming. Well, here's two problems with that. Number one, he may come when you and I least expect it. Number two, even if he doesn't come in my lifetime, guess what I'm going to do? I'm going to die, and my life is sealed when I die. So that there's two things I've got to be concerned about. Number one, I don't know how long I'm going to live. Number two, I don't know when the Lord's coming back. And number three, as we've tied all together, when he does come back, it's going to be a universal judgment between the righteous and the unrighteous. Now, does God love to send people to hell? No. No. People end up in hell because they choose to ignore God's love. And in this context, people are ending up in hell because you had scoffers leading them away. Oh, you don't have to worry about that. He's not coming back now. Look at it. It's gone so long. You think he's going to come back tomorrow? Maybe. Maybe. That's right. Be ready. And that's what he says in the next verse. In the next verse, but the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night. How many in this room have been robbed? Either your house have robbed or you, okay, we've got one back there. We've got a number of people. So did the thief let you know when he's coming? Send you a little card. I'm coming next week. No. And on the clear, unexpectedly, lo and behold, you've been robbed. Now, it's not saying the Lord's a thief, but it's saying the thief comes in unknown time. The Lord is going to come in an unknown time. So you're not going to have, well, this situation is that, therefore the Lord's coming soon. Could the Lord come in my generation and your generation? Absolutely. Will he? I don't know. He might wait another 100 years. I don't know, because time is not of essence of God. But he definitely could come in my time. I mean, we look at America, those of us who've lived for a lengthy period of time, and we see the changes in America, and we think, he's getting ready to come now. I really don't know, because you can look back in the first century. Did they have it evil back in the first century? And he didn't come back then. I don't know. So who said it? Someone said, so live as if today's your last day. Right? And if you do that, you can't go wrong. But what's happening is they're getting caught up by the scoffers. And what's happening today is we tend to think we've got plenty of time to make changes. You don't know how much time you have. I don't know how much time I have. How many of us, and I think everyone in this room could raise their hand, has had a loved one or someone close to you died what we would say an unexpected death? Yeah. Okay. We don't know. And we don't pay attention to that. We just assume things. You know, when I've been at congregations, I'll see old people who have a lot of sicknesses, and I'm thinking, well, they're going to die soon. And they outlive those who I never even had on that scenario that they're going to die. Had a close friend, I told you this, he's coming back from taking care of his mom in Tennessee. Drove home from Tennessee to Illinois. Got killed mid-morning by a deer jumping into his car and went through his windshield on I-65. Mid-morning. Who would have predicted that? So I held his funeral in Tennessee. The man I slept with, it's too unreal to make this up. The man I rented the room with for that funeral, him and I talked about this brother. 3 weeks later, 3 weeks after that, I'm preaching the funeral of the man who I was in the room with 3 weeks earlier. He died suddenly of a heart attack. Matt, we just don't know. And there's one little point not here, but we should take. Enjoy the presence of one another. It's good we can see each other tonight, and hopefully we'll see each other, Lord willing, this coming Sunday. But there's no, like Joe said, there's no guarantee. There's no guarantee of that. Now, that doesn't mean you live in fear. That just means you're aware that life is fragile. But in this context, these scoffers are leading people astray. Oh, and what's going to happen in the last day? Verse 10. Okay, he's going to come as a thief in the night. What's going to pass away? Okay, with a great fervent heat. Very clear. Now, there's a lot of discussion about Greek words. I don't know much about Greek, so I'm not going to the Greek words. But the point is, this earth is no longer going to be. Remember 1 Thessalonians we read in 4? The Lord's coming down in his judgment. Never says the Lord touches foot on the earth. Never says that. You find the verse where he touches foot on earth again. You're not going to find the verse. It's not there. We meet him in the air. In fact, he's not going to touch foot on the earth because of his lineage. He would be from Caniah, and nobody from Caniah could rule. And that's a whole study of itself in the Old Testament, could rule from the earth. So he's not ruling from this earth. So the foolishness of Jesus coming down to this earth and setting up a kingdom for 1,000 years on this earth, and then there's a great destruction, and then he brings them up to heaven. There's so many things wrong with that. Number one, that teaches that my Lord failed his first time, which he didn't. Number two, that gives two hopes. That gives a hope to live 1,000 years on this earth, and then the hope after the 1,000 years, you're going home to heaven. Number three, if it's a utopia on this year for the 1,000 years, where'd all the evil come from? If it's a utopia, where the, you see, but people love premillennialism. Most of your religious neighbors, now you can't ask them, are you premillennialist? They don't go by that. But most people believe that Christ is going to come and reign on this earth for 1,000 years. That is totally, 100%, unequivocally wrong. Totally wrong. He set up his kingdom on the day of Pentecost. We become a part of the kingdom when we obey the gospel. And when he comes back, he's not coming back to set up a kingdom. He's already the king of his kingdom. He's going to return it back to the Father. And I can show you chapter, book, chapter, and verse for all those points. But the point is here, I got to thinking about this yesterday. I was working on my class yesterday as I teach my grandson how to drive. It's interesting because he's got to go to class. So what I do is I drive out to the house, let him drive to class. And that gives me the ability to go to a fast food restaurant to eat some fast food, which is terrible for you, and sit down and study. And as I study for an hour, go back to this verse 10. Notice the whole earth and the works that are therein are going to be burnt up. Going to be no longer there. Even those beautiful things that we remember are not going to be there. Everything is going to be dissolved. Everything's going to be devastated. If you know some place that you really love and that you go retreat at, it's going to be gone. Everything's going to be gone. Animals, birds, fish, monuments, all of it's gone.
Be fine with me.
All of our stuff. And therefore, the point is, we need to be prepared. We've got a couple minutes left. Let's read this one box. If you looked at, and where I'm on page number 35, I'm dropping down where it says 2 Peter 3:10, English Standard, New American. It's okay. See, some say not destroyed. Some will say will be exposed, laid bare. New American Standard burned up, similar to the New King James Version. But I want to read what Robert Harkrider said. Gary, I'm picking on you tonight. Go ahead and read that one for me, please.
The earth also and the works that are therein shall be burned up. Instead of burned up, some manuscripts render this as discovered. Everything will be laid bare. All that man has accomplished in this material world will be exposed and brought to dissolution. Of what value will it be if man has gained the whole world and loses his soul? Matthew 16:26. All things will be laid bare before the eyes of the Lord.
Okay, and then we got the Hebrews 4 and Ecclesiastes. Remember Ecclesiastes 12. What's the whole duty of man? Fear God and keep his commandments. Okay, was Solomon a rich man? Did he have whatever his heart desired? Did that solve and that make him at peace? No. Fear God and keep his commandments. Doesn't mean we can't enjoy this world. But understand, this. We sing a song, this world is what? This world is not my home. That's right. So we'll talk more about the text. Be ready with the questions. So we're going to start in verse 11. You want to circle verse 11.